Welcome to the Strength Connection Podcast, a show to share stories, insights, and experiences in strength physically, mentally, and spiritually. I'm Michael Krukowski, host of the Strength Connection, and I'm so grateful that you can join me today. So in these episodes, I connect with some of the most inspiring and successful individuals to chop it up and learn from true life experiences that have helped them become who they are, the strongest versions of themselves. So let's dive in. Here we go.
All right. And we're live. Scott Allen, thanks so much for joining me today. I appreciate it.
Well, thanks for having me. It's great to be here.
Literally all the way across the world coming from Japan. So I appreciate it. What time is it over there right now?
It's about 10 p.m. So if you're on the East Coast, it's probably 9 a.m. for you. And I usually stay up a little bit later anyway, working on a lot of things, putting together a book or something. So, but yeah, I'm glad to join you today.
Perfect. Yeah. So you just told me offhand, I wanted to save it for recording, but it's almost 26 years that you've been living in Japan now. How did this come about? How did you end up getting over there?
Wow. I'll try to give you the shorter version of that, but let's see. So I'm from Canada originally. I was living in Vancouver at the time, from Nova Scotia. I moved out to Vancouver after finishing university to find work, and ended up working as an electrical engineer for about 5 or 6 years. And after that time, I got bored. I just wanted something more out of life. You know, I was doing some interesting things, I guess, but I was spending a lot of time in the bars, just hanging out, working. And I started to go through this transition period in my life where I was craving change and I couldn't figure out where it was coming from. Well, actually, I actually did figure out where it was coming from, and we can see, I'll put that into the story as well. But I had to change my mindset. I had to change the way I was living, or else I just probably wasn't going to end up in a very good place, you know. So it's going through, like addiction therapy and all kind of like for drinking and all kinds of like things like that. And once I started to get my brain straight, I was in the bookstore one day going through and I found a book by Tony Robbins. In fact, I thought I'd bring it on the show today, Waking the Giant Within. I picked up the book and something just told me, like, you've got to get this book. And I had started reading self-help books and just read a couple of them. And it's like, and I could feel myself, like something was changing in my brain, right? It was just like, every time I read a new book or a new idea, I was like, wow, that was, you know, that's interesting. I'm going to try that out. And I go try something out and, you know, get some kind of a result. And I really liked it, right? So anyway, picked up Tony's book, took it home. You know, it's a kind of a big book, right? But I read it cover to cover in about 4 days. And when I got to this section on goal setting, I was like, wow, I've never done this before. I've never set goals for myself before. Let's try this out. So I sat down, I started, you know, writing out my goals and stuff like that. And, you know, Tony said, you should create a vision board as well. And I was thinking, well, that's a great idea, vision board. And within like a week, I turned my entire like small apartment, all the walls were covered in like pictures of places I wanted to go. And this was pre-internet, by the way. So I wasn't like printing stuff off of Google or anything, right?
Cutting out in the magazines and
cutting stuff out of the magazines. You know, I go to the doctor's office and when I left, you know, I'd like tuck a couple of magazines under and go home. Yeah. And like, now it's geographic, right? Yep. It was just great. I was just collecting all this stuff. And then, you know, I was reading these books and they all had quotes in them as well. Like those positivity quotes were just gold. So I was writing those down and just putting those up and on my wall. And now I just had like, I had this vision of what I wanted to do. Now what was on the wall, actually, when I wrote up my goals, there were three things that I remember writing out. And one of them was, I just wanted to keep healing and getting better, right? Working on this mindset thing. I was always very physically active. Like I still go to the gym today. I've been doing that since I was 16. So that was like the one thing I've always done consistently. But my mind was just the one thing that like needed a lot of healing. So that was the one thing. The second thing was, and I don't know where this came from, but I wanted to travel the world. And I was like, kind of like, you know, I like being in my little circle and just, you know, it would just take me a lot to sometimes get out of the city. Right. But I just had this idea where like, I have to go traveling the world. And the third thing was writing books. Cause I wrote my first book when I was like 14 and I gave it up for a long time, but I eventually obviously got back to it again. Right. But I knew like that was the one thing I always wanted to do. So there were my three things. I looked at it and go like, what's the one thing I could actually start today? And it was the traveling thing. And I made a decision, like literally on that day, I said, I'm going to travel the world. And I made that decision and it never changed. Like that was it. And I'm like that with certain things. You know, it's like, I'm going to go do this thing. And as soon as I make that decision, I will go and do it. Right. I didn't think about the outcome. I didn't, go like, how am I going to do this? I have no money. And, there's like a lot of excuses. I just like, I knew I was going to do it. I decided to do it a year from that date when I decided to do it. So during that time, when I made that decision, and here's where things got interesting. I started meeting people just suddenly by coincidence, if we believe in that, that had traveled the world. And people were starting to tell me stories. And they're like, yeah, I went to Indonesia, I went to Vietnam. And I started forming this vision of myself going to these places. Hence, my vision board started growing of like, I had pictures of like the Buddhist temples in Thailand, and I knew I had to go there, and Vietnam, and just like China, like walking on the Great Wall of China. And I wanted to do the things that I'd never done before, not just the things that I hadn't done before. I wanted to do something that nobody I knew had ever done before, And so I was like, I'm going to do this thing. And yeah, I had a job, and I was like, no, I'm going to quit my job and go do this thing. So anyway, time went by. And I'm planning this thing, and I'm starting to tell people about it. Right now, whenever you tell people about a big dream or goal, or some people are like, yeah, that sounds nice, and other people will kind of like laugh and go, oh, you'll still be here next year, but I was like, yeah, okay. And it didn't faze me at all because I knew what my plan was. Anyway, I'd say about 3 or 4 months into that, came home one day, and my roommate, he always read the newspaper. I've never read a newspaper in my life, and it just happened to be on the table one day. And the only time I ever opened one up was to check like the matinees or the movies, right? And
Right.
on this particular day, somebody said, pick up that newspaper. And I did. I picked it up, opened it up, and literally just opened it to a page. And right there's an advertisement that said, teach English in Japan, apply now. And I'm like, well, yeah, well, I'm going to Thailand anyway. Why don't I try that out? So I wrote up a fancy resume with a cover letter, sent it off, and didn't think anything about it. It's like, okay, just it's out of my hands. I sent it off, and they called me up about a month later and said, we want to interview you. So about a week after that, to getting the phone call, I'm in downtown Vancouver, sitting there with a Japanese businessman who just flew over from Japan to interview a bunch of people to bring over to Japan to for this like business school he was setting up, right? And so I was like, and it was always like, well, there's nothing to lose. And so I went to the interview, and they called me up about a week later, and they said, thanks for coming in for the interview, but you didn't actually make it. We chose three people, and you were number four, and we did interview like 100 people. So, and that was it. But if anything changes, we'll let you know. I was like, all right, sure. But it didn't faze me. I was still going to Thailand, or all I knew I was just going to get on an airplane on this specific date, which was March 26th. Anyway, the next day the phone rings, and it was the same woman, and she said, the third guy dropped out, so you're in, right? And I'm like, great, okay. And I remember just saying, great, when do we leave? And that was it. And anyway, kind of a long story, but I had about 6 months to prepare because just they said we're going to leave in March, and it was like September. And the thing is like the date that they wanted me to go there was March 26, which was the date that I decided I was going to go anyway. So it just happened to be the same date. But anyway, yeah, they brought me over here. There was a lot of prep to get here, just in terms of like getting a working holiday visa, learning how to use chopsticks, and that I didn't know any Japanese when I got here. I just got off the plane, and the company personnel met us and took us to, they set us up in a homestay, gave us a car, and I was just living the dream. And I was like, and I was making like twice as much money as soon as I got here, right? Compared to my job in Canada. So I was like, after a week, I was like, no, I'm not going back. I'm going to stay, And I did, because I've been here for a long time. But, it's just always like these coincidences that would happen. As soon as you make a decision, something just happened to keep things moving forward, right? So you can call that karma, or I call it the magic. There's other synchronicity, there's other names for it, but I just had this like, I think I love what Jim Carrey said. Like, if you ever watched any of his interviews, he said, like, he just has this insane ability to manifest his future. And I feel like that's what I was always doing, even though I wasn't aware of it at the time. But it always started with like that decision, like, I'm going to do that thing. And then, things just started popping up to make it happen. So,
It says the manifesting, concept and that conversation is always an interesting one to me, because what you did to manifest is you took action on it. And I think that's always the thing that gets fallen off the side. It's like, yeah, you can vision all these things out there, but if you don't actually put boots to ground and actually start doing something for it, then you're not just going to sit there and the Ferrari is going to come into the driveway. It's like you got to take action on it. And that's where I always think it's like the rubber hits the road on that. It's funny though, Scott, that as you're talking about your vision board and the three things like working on mindset, traveling the world, and then writing a book. Traveling the world is really one of that's the hardest out of those three to actually do. So it's interesting that that was the first one that you're like, I'm going to start this first, because you can easily grab a pen and paper and start writing, or you can meditate and go into mindset, do something there. But it's something really called to you about the traveling on it. Have you ever thought about that? Like that does seem like the hardest one out of all those three.
Yeah, it was. I mean, just culturally, like coming to a different culture, I didn't know anything about, well, I mean, I saw a few movies, you know, Hollywood movies that were made in Japan, but I mean, aside from that, I didn't know a lot. So, but the thing is, though, I just like, I know, you know, I did meet a lot of foreigners that were living here, and some of them were just like, I can't wait to get out of here. This place sucks, da, da, da. But I was having a great time, and I just always had like really good luck. And I seemed to meld right into the culture, but I realized it wasn't just this culture. Eventually, I did go to Thailand for like vacations, right? And I went to Vietnam, and I just love going to these different places because they're all different, you know? And yeah, eventually made it to the Great Wall of China and all these things. But what I loved about it is like I learned different things from all these cultures, but you also learn a lot about yourself as well. Like you start to, you know, it does make you, it makes you a lot tougher, it makes you stronger because you start to adapt to these different cultures. That would, I think, like some of them would break a lot of people, I think, right? So, and they were not always easy. Like, you know, you come up against cultural barriers and those things and misunderstandings and everything. But, you know, you try to adapt to it and think, learn and understand why people think this way, why they do things this way. Like, you know, some people I know, like they would get really bent out of shape. Like, why do they do these things? They don't do this back in my hometown. And, you know, we're not there, we're here, and this is how they do things. So, you know, I was just always trying to, you know, understand how things worked. Not that I wasn't trying to get along with everybody. But I knew like if I could learn the language, for example, like when I got here, the first thing I did is I dove right into the language. First of all, I love learning. And I realized like when I learned the language, I met more friends, I met more people, right? So that actually opened up a bunch of doors that would not have been there if I hadn't learned how to, you know, at least order a cup of coffee or something. But you know, and I would walk around with a notebook, and every time I would just be constantly listening, and every time I heard a word or a phrase I didn't know, I'd like write that down and go check it out later. And every time you do that, you just get a little better, a little better. But again, those are all things like you know, I've had friends that have been here for what as long as I have, and they can't speak any Japanese, and that's fine, that's their decision. But you know, I knew like if I could learn this thing, and this is just one of the things that I learned, but if I could learn how to do this, then like who knows what the impact's going to be down the road. And eventually it did open up like job opportunities and other things as well. So yeah.
It is. You can leave your safe environment, right? But you can keep your environment with you when you go to these other places and kind of close off, you know, from these spots. And those are probably the ones that had, you know, the lesser experiences of experiencing everything in there. It is an interesting concept, Scott, of like you learn about yourself when you get out of kind of your own comforts in your environment. It's almost kind of it's a little bit of like a contradictory thing on a logical side. But it really is like such an interesting concept of getting away from the things that you are accustomed to. You actually learn more about yourself. And I'm assuming that's probably just more of you're just experiencing more different things outside of your own perspective.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah. One of my favorite quotes, and I used to have those up on my wall too, is like, you know, the mind, once stretched by a new idea, never returns to its original dimensions, or goes something like that. But I just love that because every time I like would, you know, meet someone new or visit some new place or learn something new, I feel like, you know, you grow from that, right? And you know, if you continue to grow from new experiences, then you're going to be able to look back on that, you know, look back on your old self like 3, 6 months, a year later, 5 years later, and you're like, wow, like I really came a long way, you know. Like you have to give yourself a break and realize like, you know, we're all just yeah, we're in a process of learning new things, but it's all about the experiences. And I just wanted to I like doing scary things actually, right? Even when they're scary, like jumping out of, you know, in December I finally achieved one of my milestones, bucket list thing of jumping out of an airplane, you know, terrified of heights, by the way. So it took us up to 20,000 feet with oxygen on. It was my first jump. Like, I don't know if this was such a good idea. But afterwards, right, you're like, wow, that was great, you know. And I've done that with a lot of things where there's always like that hesitation, like getting on an airplane and going to a strange place. But once you're there and once you're immersed in it, it's like, you've crossed the point of no return, right? You know, I'm here now, so I've just made the jump. So, there's no back. But afterwards, you're just like you've grown from that, and you now you've got a story to tell, and it just becomes like just makes your life so much more rich and interesting. So.
Yeah. So, I mean, the work that you do with mental performance and, transformational strategies and working with people, and then all the books that you wrote, I can tell just right off the bat, like you practice what you preach, which I think is always the number one thing, specifically for coaching. How was this evolution for you? I mean, you went over there in Japan to teach English, which eventually turned into now you work in the high performance field and working with empowering people and stuff. What was that transition like? How did you end up getting into the field of coaching, of, mindset, building mental resilience?
Yeah, great question. So after I'd been teaching for, I think I was doing it for about 10 years, maybe, I started getting restless. And that's usually a sign that something needs to change, right? Now, writing books was something like I'd never forgotten that goal. Like I knew that had to be a thing before, I left this earth. Like I had to be a writer. Like it's just, it wasn't even a question. And like I said, it was one of those three goals that I wrote down. But yeah, I just realized one day, again, it was one of those things where it's like, I've got to get back into writing. And I just kept saying that to myself again and again. I'm gonna write a book. And I started telling people about it, and they're like, oh yeah, sure, you're gonna be a big best-selling author. And I'm like, well. And that kind of like fed into my self-doubt. So I really procrastinated on that for quite some time until I started reading. I started picking up books on publishing and learning a lot about the business side of it, actually. And I wasn't even really writing anything at this stage. I think I was procrastinating on it, but I was like reading books on writing and then making some notes. And that probably went on for like a year or two until one day, I was talking to a friend of mine, and I just caught myself when I said to my friend, yeah, I'm going to write a book someday. And I realized as soon as I said someday, like there it was. There was that procrastination moment, what I've been saying the whole time. And I realized, like, that's it. Like today, I'm going to start writing this book. And I literally that day, I remember sitting down with just I had lots of notes and stuff I was taking, but I mean, I wasn't really committed to it yet. There was like that, yeah, fear was holding me back, but it was just the fear of starting something new, I think. But once I started it, it was like I showed up every day for pretty much like for like 3 years, and I wrote 100 or 200,000 words. I don't remember. This was even before self-publishing. I did end up self-publishing, and I have like publishers now in different countries that publish my material. But before that, it was really just like I'm just going to write this book. And then once I had the material together, it was like, well, now what do I do? Like I guess you need a cover design, right? But one thing that I did with that, though, by the way, the coming back to the visualization thing, I built another visualization board with cover designs of the books that I hadn't written yet. And this is kind of before we had a lot of the tools now, like Canva and a whole bunch of other things. You can just go in there and hire designers on Fiverr or stuff like that. It was even before that. So I was just sketching stuff out. I was a pretty good illustrator, just sketching things out and maybe printing things off the internet, pictures like that. But I was putting them together. Putting my name on it, putting these covers up on the wall, because I had to see that, and that really was a big inspiration for me, just doing that. But it was a lot of work, I mean, writing is hard work. But every time I finished a chapter or finished if I finished like one of the books I was putting together, I was like, something changed, like something was changing inside me. But I knew like I had to get this published, right? So I think around that time is when Amazon finally kicked off their self-publishing thing. And I was already pitching my book to publishers anyway, had a few rejection letters, of course. But when self-publishing started up, I was like one of the first people in there back in the day. Like, now there's like so many books on there, you can't find anything. Back in the day, like you literally knew everybody who was publishing because there weren't that many people. And there were no courses on it, there wasn't anything. So Amazon had a couple of videos on it, maybe, but we just figured stuff out. And I just like And the books I have now, like they're or sorry, the books that I had published back then, they had since been taken down, put up, and revised and everything. So they're not on there now. But the transition there, like that journey was like, it wasn't perfect, you know. I mean, if I'd waited until I was ready, I probably would not have done anything, right? You know, and if I'd waited until I had the perfect cover design, because the cover designs were actually pretty bad, you know, I would not have published the book, right? But I just put it up there, you know, and I just put it out there. And sure, I eventually took it down because I realized a year or two later when I was better at the craft, it was like, those actually aren't very good. I'm going to take those down and make them better and put up better covers. And I got a better editor. And, you know, it's just this process of always, you know, reinventing everything, right? Which is something that I'm really passionate about, is like just making things better. I get stuck in perfection like everybody else, and it holds me back. And it's like, well, I'll do that when I'm ready. But, you know, you have to start somewhere with something in order to get to where you want to get, you know, where you want to get to. So that was just it. And I don't know, it's just something inside me, like this, I'm very obsessive. Like once I really get into something, like I want to see how far I can go with it. So once I put out a book or two or three, I was like, I wasn't slowing down. I just kept getting more ideas and more ideas, and eventually started coaching people on how to, because people were asking me, well, you know, how did you write the book and how'd you do this? And I was like, well, I can show you if you want to. So eventually started coaching people through the process, and you know, that just led into that, just actually really helped me a lot as an author by helping other people to put their books out there as well. So yeah, but
You know, it's interesting. I remember Blake Kessel was on my podcast about a year ago, and he created the Body Elastics program, you know, in health and fitness, you know, and these things are everywhere in every gym, but nobody knows like who it is or like what the company is. And he talked about the process of, you know, inventing these things. And it started with one, you know, specific prototype and model. Then they figured out that, oh, well, this is wrong or this didn't feel right. So they made that change. And then this happened and then this happened. And he realized all these problems that came down the line, he would have never saw or never really thought of. But when it was there, like the only way to see the next problem or the next thing is to actually keep moving forward with it and realize like it, you know, takes 40 different transitions of doing something and adjustments till he finally had the product that he works with now and develops. But it's such that interesting concept that if you keep waiting to think that you see everything in front of you of every single step that you're doing, you're never going to get off the ground. And it seems like that's really where procrastination as us as a whole, you know, comes from, is not just like not wanting to do it, but just thinking that we need to see every step of the process crystal clear down the path. And that's just unfortunately just never going to happen. You have to put that step down one foot in front of the other. So, but you said there, like you wrote your first book when you said 14 years old. So you've been writing for forever in there. What were you writing back then?
It was a science fiction book, actually.
Nice. Okay.
I don't know if I still have the notes around, but when I started, yeah. So actually, and I love books. You know, I grew up with Stephen King, and you know, all my friends were reading comic books. I was reading Pet Sematary, you know, under the covers, like I'm like 12 years old, right? Just scared out of my mind. But I was like, I want to write these kinds of stories. So it's a combination of like horror, sci-fi. Like, I mean, I just came up with all kinds of ideas. And you know, my father would bring home all these like yellow legal pads from the office because we couldn't afford a typewriter. So I was just like handwriting everything out, you know, and I spent like a year or two just writing all these books. Now I never ended up publishing them, of course, like at that time. But when I got back into writing just probably like what, 15 years ago, before the transition, by the way, like I do, you know, I write self-help personal development books. Yes, but I was actually started as a fiction author, and I'd written a couple of books which I haven't published yet. I will be doing those though eventually. But I don't know, one day I just had this like something just said, no, you've got to do the self-help books because you know, like that's what, you know, like when I look back to like my journey of healing, it was really like the self-help books that helped me to get to where I am. So I felt like compelled to write my own. And also, I was using Tony Robbins' book, Awaken the Giant Within, as a model for that, right? And it's like, I wasn't trying to copy what Tony had done. I was like, I want to write a book as good as that. And I don't know if I did, but I did write a very big book. There were so many pages, I had to split it up into three different books. But that was like part of the like that the transition from fiction to nonfiction just made sense at the time. And I think I've I still work on book projects all the time. I mean, I just come up with ideas, and but it's not like, I look for new angles and things that I haven't done yet, because I need to keep growing with the craft, and just like learning. Like every time you create a song, you write a book or something, like you put something out there, again, you learn a lot about yourself, and you have to be willing to take feedback as well. I mean, I don't have all positive feedback. Not everybody loved the books, and I'm okay with that, because the good thing about that is that I pay attention to that. When someone gives me feedback on something, if it's constructive feedback, I'll take that and make the product better, right? So, it's just like your mindset has a lot to do with it. Because I worked with a lot of, I think, like potential authors where they're like, they just never finished their projects because they were too worried about what the world was going to think if they put it out there. And it's easy. I could say, well, don't care what people think. And but the truth is, we do. We care what they think.
Of
And
course. Especially
so.
when you're passionate about something, you're putting it in, and then you're releasing it out, like you're bringing that out to other people's criticism. I mean, hey, some people hate The Shining. I think it's one of the greatest books ever, written. I'm a huge Stephen King fan. Do you think writing or even reading fiction helped you with your work that you did with nonfiction?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. So this is something interesting that I did. I went from reading books, and I had hundreds of paperback. Like, I just love books. And, I was always like, I had so many fiction books in my closet, it was filled. But when I realized that I was going to be writing a book, I wasn't just reading the books anymore. I was highlighting passages, and I was actually taking them apart, just to figure out like how they were, like the structure, like why would they structure it this way? And I would do the same thing with the self, like with nonfiction books as well. I made it, it was almost like a field of study where I had to figure out how this book was put together. So I remember like highlighting everything in the book, passages that I liked. I would be reading the book here and like actually copying the, because I wanted to get really good at the writing. So I wanted to put myself into the mind of the writer. And I'd actually just write out the pages like verbatim, but they were like on the page, right? Things like that. So I really got into it. And I didn't realize it at the time, but I realize now that it really set me up for knowing a lot about the publishing business just by doing that. And the combination of reading a bunch of books on writing, again, I just became really obsessed with that. Like, so obsessed, I wanted to, at the time, I don't think I had planned on writing 30 or 40 books, but I knew like I wasn't going to stop doing it, right? Any more than anybody could have stopped me from getting on the plane when I decided to move to Japan, things like that. I was like, nope, I'm doing this thing, and I'm going to see how far I can take it, so.
I think it is. I personally, the last year, started reading a lot more fiction and just writing just kind of like short story type work. And I found it fascinating. Just the it opens up a different part of the imagination in your mind, because I think with all the nonfiction work and the seriousness that we have in everything that we do, it can almost create a little bit of a closed-minded loop. And just opening it up and just reading a fun adventure of something and just like seeing different ways that people put ideas and thoughts together, it's actually one of the best things that you can do for personal development, because it's just opening your mind up to a little bit more of that creative flow. There's that yin and yang. It's like we spend so much time in the yang, like that very structured, very dominant type work. Allowing for a little bit of just that openness seems like it helps everything else going on in life.
The imagination, this is interesting. Like, I nearly flunked out of school and probably university because I was always daydreaming, right? So, the teacher would be giving the instruction, and all the students, they'd be focused on their schoolwork, and I'd be staring out the window thinking about, like, how can I get to Mars? Like, I'd just be dreaming up stories and stuff like that. And I still do. Like, I come up with stories all the time. And whether it's a thriller or a horror or whatever it is, and I think it's a great thing, and even though I write mostly self-help nonfiction, I still write fiction occasionally, and I want to get back to it. But you're right, like when reading a story, like it's just it for me, like whenever I'm reading that story, I visualize myself, I think, as the hero, as most people might do, in that story, and like, oh, what would I do in that situation? And I'm really big with like music soundtracks. I've always loved listening to soundtracks. way back when, you know, John Williams was creating, like I was always buying soundtracks because I'd listen to the music and I'd visualize myself as, you know, I was Indiana Jones running ahead of the boulder. I was like doing all these things. Like I just always had that imagination. So, but I think like we all have that ability, right? And I think unfortunately, a lot of people maybe they shut it off or they tune it out or they stop believing in the magic. I think that's just my friends kind of laugh like when I tell them like, you know, there really is such a thing as Santa Claus because that's really that's something that's lives in my mind still because when I was a kid, I believed so strongly in Santa Claus that like nobody could tell me any differently. But I remember the power of that belief was so strong that later on, you know, like let's just say if somebody had said there's no such thing as that, I would argue that, right? And I still would because I believe like it's the magic in us all that like sparks that imagination and the curiosity. And I think that's just like a really strong driver. So.
That's an interesting concept because it is. It's like your belief at that time is so strong. It doesn't mean it wasn't real. Maybe it's evolved and changed over time from there. But no, that's a really interesting concept. How has your writing and the process that you work with evolved over time? Like from book one to book 30, what are some of the things that have changed? Is it like a framework, or is it like how you think about what you're going to write? Like, what are the evolutions that you've had that are the big changes over this time?
Yeah, I certainly develop a framework now. Now, back when I was putting the books together, I didn't realize it at the time, but I was building a framework at the time. I just didn't call it that. You know, I was just like chapters 1 to 10, and you know, chapter one was actually on visualizing your future. Chapter two was on beliefs, and chapter three was so that was the framework. But I realized years later when I went back and looked at it, I was like, oh, I was actually building out this framework for people to follow this process so that they could achieve this. And when I realized that, I was like some of the books kind of went like away from that framework maybe, and they were just like kind of like a little bit too, you know, information based, right? So I started to, I think, clean things up a little bit and just get more you know, like more definitive with the framework that I wanted. So I the way I visualize it actually is when it comes to the framework is like I visualize myself giving a workshop or being on stage and walking people through the steps of this framework, whether it's a 7 steps or 4 steps or whatever it may be, because they have a problem that needs solving. And so that's how I approach the books right now. Not all the books were designed like that. Sometimes I just put together, you know, I had an idea, I put it together. Sometimes it was a compilation of ideas, but the framework was the key because that's what people need in the end. It's like they need to know what the process is so that they can. I'm really big on systems too. So, you know, if I have a, I like to build a system so I can teach that system to people and then teach other people how to teach the system to people, right? So if you have a framework for that, anybody can take it and put it into practice. Sure, we have to, you know, customize it over time and tweak it. But so yeah, I'll sit down and, you know, sure. I mean, nowadays, you know, I'll use ChatGPT to help with some of the structuring and stuff like that. But even before, you know, that's really still like a recent tool, I think, to me, because before that, I would spend weeks and weeks on outlining and frameworks. And up on my wall, and I still do this, by the way, up on my wall, I've got sticky notes of all the ideas, like the current book I'm working on, which is called Empower Your Imagination, and another sequel to Do the Hard Things First. Up on my wall, I have like just sticky notes of they're both separated and they're just like all like this, like the chapters and the sections and everything. So I just love to have like again, like always having those visuals in front of me. Just keeps it at the front of my mind, like, oh yeah, that's the project I'm working on. So,
I love that. I think the, you know, there's this notion of, you know, there's no one way to do it. You have to find your own way. And I think that's it's a powerful idea. You know, it's a very Taoist, you know, based idea. And I think there's a lot of truth to it, but it doesn't mean that you can't borrow coordinates from other people. You know, you can't borrow frameworks. It's like try a lot of different areas, a lot of different systems, and then maybe you'll find the best one that works for you. But I was always curious about that because I've done more like a lot of stream of consciousness type stuff that seems to flow very well for me in it. But if I'm doing something like a presentation, I have to have a frame. I can't do stream of consciousness. I have to have the bullet point. So it is, it's like it's always kind of finding your own avenue going in there, Scott. I wanted to ask you about you've talked a lot and you've worked a lot on the concept of confidence. And this is something I'm really interested in. I remember Dr. Nate Zinsser was on my podcast who wrote The Confident Mind. And one of the most powerful things is about like building self-confidence in there. But what strategies have shown you the best success for people in developing self-confidence, either in writing or maybe in other avenues as well?
Yeah, so I think you said it earlier, like it really comes down to taking action, but you have to know what you're taking action towards. So that means like having a goal, right? For me, like the lack of confidence always came from, yes, procrastinating. But when I really looked at it, it's like, well, why am I procrastinating? Oh, because I'm afraid of doing this thing because I think I might fail, right? So over here, I wanted to be super confident. And on the other side of it, I was, you know, scared to move forward because I might experience like, you know, the fear of failure and all those things. So I always found like my like confidence always rises when you take action towards something, even if you're not, you don't get the outcome that you want. And in most cases, you may not get that outcome at all. Like it'll be, you'll something will happen. It just may not be what you were expecting, right? But at least you're going to learn from that. And Tom Bilyeu, who runs Impact Theory, he's one of my favorite mentors and coaches. And he always said that failure is like a data-rich like stream of information, or you know, you're going to learn something from that failure. So confidence isn't about doing something perfectly and succeeding, and now you're confident. It's just it's being scared, which is good. It's taking action towards something even when you're scared to do it, right? So Susan Jeffers, who wrote was it Feel the Fear and Do It Anyway, like that's one of my favorite books. And I can't quote anything from the book. It's been a while since I looked at it, but that was one of the things she had said, is like she was always afraid to do something, but when she did it, she just you know, felt more confident after doing it. And this was kind of where the do the hard things first concept actually came around, because of my chronic procrastination. Although I had already been publishing books, and you know, I think I was somewhat successful, I had this other side of me that would procrastinate on things for like months and years. Like it was just, it could have been something like filling out an application form. So the thing is that every time I looked at that application form that I should have filled out months ago, every time I looked at it, my, you know, the confidence was just gone. You know, I was just like, oh, I'm a failure, I can't do this. And you start making, you know, excuses and then beating yourself up. And, you know, the only way to get through that is to get that done, get it off your plate, and then your confidence is just gonna go up a little step. And then you do another thing, you know, and then you do another thing. And you don't have to do like, you know, you don't have to like, you know, build the whole house all at once, you know, just take it step by step. But yeah, I have a book called Empower Your Confidence. And that was like when I was researching that book, I actually read a lot of other books on confidence, which is one of my the processes when I'm writing a book, I'll find three, four, or five books on that subject, just read them voraciously and learn everything I can. Not so I can, you know, copy the material. I just want to see how other people are talking about this subject, because I have to analyze it and interpret it and then use it, you know, like teach that information as well in my own words. So, but anyway, yeah, I found that the confidence thing is, it's not something like where, you know, you're always gonna be, you know, your confidence is gonna go up and up and up, and then it's probably gonna take a nosedive whenever you try something new. Because here's the thing, right? This is related to the identity as well. Like, I'm really big on identity, and especially identity transformation. So whenever I wanted to become something that I'd never been before, you know, you're not going to feel confident, right? You know, you're starting at square one, just like everybody else. But the more you do, the better you, I shouldn't say like the better you feel, but the more confident you feel, because that's going to be the experience of taking action, right? So,
Yeah, I think it's an interesting distinction. You know, we think that confidence is something that is just the same across the board, right? Where you can go into something new and you can still have confidence in yourself. But if you think you're going to have confidence in this new thing that you've never done before, I think that's the better word for that is delusion. You know, it's like, I mean, you've never done something before. So to have all this confidence of somebody who, if you've never wrote a book before, you know, and you've written 30, you know, plus, yeah, your confidence in being able to write the next one is going to be much different than the other one. I mean, it's just from experience level from that. But I often think like, is confidence believed to be a prerequisite for success with people?
No, absolutely not. In fact, like that's something that's like a muscle you're going to build as you move forward, right? So the thing is, like, if you wait for confidence to show up, it's like you're going to be waiting a very long time because you're going to have days where you're feeling confident about it, and then other days where you're just like, I don't know if I can do this thing, but I'm going to try it and see what happens. Because, and this happens to me all the time, you know, it's like, well, I know, like, you know, I really need to record that video, but and this is just a quick story, by the way, about confidence. So I'm somewhat of a confident writer, I think, like after doing it long enough, you know, like I'm very comfortable sitting down and creating content. But I had a thing about recording videos. Like, you know, we brought a guy over, like, I think last month, to record some videos for YouTube, and you know, they're setting it up, and it was literally like he would set up the camera. And he'd be like, okay, we're recording. And it was just like a different person. Like, I just felt like I had no confidence to speak. I would just sit there in front of the camera. And I was like, where's the script? Oh, there is no script. I have to just, you know, and like, I just couldn't say anything, right? It was really weird. I still do it. It still happens. But we started making more videos. And the more videos we made, the first were really clunky. And you know, I might have even been speaking a different language sometimes. It's like I don't remember what I was saying, but the more we did, the more relaxed I felt. My anxiety was less. And after doing like 5, 6, or 10 videos, I was like, oh, this wasn't so bad after all. But that's like I built that up in my mind to such a, it was like such a monster that you know, for me to even just like turn my phone on and do a TikTok video became a major event, you know. So not so much now, but that's just an example of one thing. And there are just different levels of that as well, right? Same with, like, we're talking about fiction and nonfiction. So yeah, I've written you know, quite a few nonfiction books, but if I went back to fiction, I'd be like, I haven't done this in a while. And but once you get into it, you just start working through it, you know, that confidence is going to come, but it's not going to be sitting there waiting for you just right out of the gate. You do have to you know, you have to build it. So
Yeah, I have a good friend who's a runner and a running coach, and he's run multiple, you know, marathons before, and he still says the first mile always sucks every day, you know. And it's like he ran a million different times, but still it's just always reestablishing that momentum of doing something that's never going to go away. And I think it's an important thing to remember. You know, so I remember I listened to a very famous comedian talking about that, where he still gets nervous about putting out a new special because he knows as soon as that material's out, he's back to square one again. This is a guy who's been doing it for 20 years. He sells out arenas all over the world, you know, so one of the most successful people in that field still has that jittery bug and like that stiffness of going in because he's got nothing prepared. And it's like, but you know, new people will give you 45 seconds to build it up, but if you don't have anything afterwards, it's just like you're back at day one. So I think it's interesting because confidence is not something that just stays at a steady, there's waves of it. It's going to go up and down depending on the day, no matter what. So like you said, building a framework of that is one of the most important things to do. So with your frameworks that you do, you mentioned a lot with coaching with writers and, you know, coaching people with transformation, you know, as well. What are some of the biggest struggles that you see with people who want to write but seem like they can't figure out like how to get it moving?
Yeah, that's a great one, 'cause yeah, I probably deal with that every day. So there's a few things that hold people back from that. So if you're writing an email, it's not such a big deal, right? You know, everybody writes an email and we can put it out there and, you know, it's done. But as soon as you say you're writing a book, suddenly it's like we all think we have to be Hemingway and we have to come up with like this perfect prose, and writing a book's a big deal. And it is. I mean, I get it. Like when I, you know, like I said, I procrastinated on that for several years, I think, you know, and I was pretending to be a writer. But when I actually sat down, because I was afraid of like my writing was going to be bad, actually. And it was, but that was our, you know, I had a lot of, you know, like, but the thing is, it's like, you don't want to, you don't like, a lot of people will frame it as, oh, my writing's really bad. And it's like, great, that's progress, you know, like you've got some, you know, words down on paper. And, but the one thing that holds people back is that they either don't start writing at all, or they spend too much time on an outline because they're trying to perfect that. And I always tell people, like, and this can be with anything, whether you're creating a course or a book, is like, you got a rough outline, take a look at it, pick a spot, and start. And I never write a book from chapter one to chapter 20. And in the movies, they always show the writers starting from chapter one and go through it. It's never like that. I'll just start with something that I know I can bang out really quickly because I need momentum, and momentum is key. And a lot of people don't get the momentum, or they do. And the thing is with with writing a book is like, because it's I've written some shorter books that are like 10 to 15,000 words. Others are like 50 to 60. And there's going to be times where it's going really well, really, really well, and then it just like drops off, and you suddenly don't feel like writing. And I hear that a lot. And I say that myself, like, I don't feel like doing this today. But feelings aside, if you wait until you're feeling like do it, you feel like doing it, or you're feeling confident, now you're just gonna do it whenever you want to. And for me, like, if I'd done it whenever I wanted to, I never would have gotten anything done, because I never wanted to. I didn't always feel like showing up, but I knew that if I didn't, the consequence would be I'm not gonna be able to, fulfill my dream of becoming an author, or whether it's that, or entering a bodybuilding competition. It could be anything. Like, if I don't show up, I'm not going to achieve that thing that I want. And that's when I'm walking authors through that that process, or people that are really struggling with like transformation. It's like, you might be scared now, and that's okay. But I always think of it like, how would you feel if you got to, the end of your life, and you look back, and the regret that you had is that you never actually did that thing that you really wanted to do. And to me, that's really the biggest fear I have, is like having that regret. It's not the regret of like failing from it. I'm okay with failing forward and failing fast and all that, but looking back and realizing, like, I had my chance, back when I was like 20, 30, 50, or 70, whatever, and I didn't do it. And I always like walk people through that process. And when I do, like, most people are like, yeah, that actually doesn't sound like a good thing to experience when I'm at the, end of my life, right? So, but yeah, a lot of people are like, they're held back by overthinking, actually. I would say like the biggest thing is like just overthinking it. It's just like, that is a real thing, by the way. I mean, it's a real problem, but I'm really big on visualization. So one thing I ask people to do, and I still do this myself, is I will sit down, and I love meditating, and there's different forms of meditation. Like, like maybe mentioned before the show, like last week I was in Kyoto meditating with Buddhist monks, and they just like, they're the traditional way, where like clear your mind and sit on the mat for an hour. And I find that really hard, because clearing my mind is not something I'm very good at. But when I'm walking people through something that they want to do creatively, it's like, visualize yourself working on this thing, and if you look at like a lot of like actors do this, and athletes do this, where they actually visualize themselves going through the motions of running or lifting those weights or something. And that really, like, that gives you energy right there. It gives you energy, makes you focused, and yes, builds confidence as well. But then you can come out of it, and you can just dive right into it. Like, it really is a good solution to getting rid of a lot of that overthinking. The overthinking is really just, the fear of like, what if this really sucks and nobody likes it? And it's like, well, I went through all, I still go through that too with certain things, like creating the videos. But when back when I was publishing the books, I didn't really think about it that too much. I was like, it might, but I was really doing it for myself, because I just wanted to publish a book and have my name on it, and whatever happens after that, we'll see. But and the thing is too, is like, remember, we can always go back and make it better later on. And that's the thing, is like, a lot of people think they're going to put something out there and that's it. But it's a process, right? So yeah.
No, I've talked a lot about visualization on this podcast. I mean, I think it's so powerful, and there's so many great examples of that. Alex Honnold, when he did Free Solo, I remember would, he would sit in his van, and he would climb the entire mountain that he was going up, every single hold, over and over and over and over and over again. What you said there, Scott, about just starting kind of in different spot, that's an interesting thing, because I think especially with writing, or you see a movie, it's always like, all right, chapter one, what's the first, call me Ishmael, Moby Dick, everybody knows the first line right there. And you think you need to go into this process, and if you're not feeling it there, it's okay to maybe write something else that is going to go on. George R. R. Martin, I think, did that with Game of Thrones. Like, he wrote a lot of different scenes in many different parts of the area just to get them out, So saying that, like just building the momentum up and getting that confidence in there. Confidence comes when you start just putting the boots on the ground and just building that up. Then all of a sudden you're going to figure out what's going really well and what's not. But just I think the great overarching message in this beautiful conversation is just the process of just taking action, just taking a step forward. And I love that you brought that up specifically right at the beginning of just having these things that you wanted to do and then immediately going and just trying it out, you know? And when that does happen, as you mentioned, like with Jim Carrey, like when you are putting those steps forward to take action, these things are going to come into your life. You know, Kobe Bryant, there was my favorite quote about that. He said, when you know exactly what you want, the world becomes your library. Like, because everything that's coming to you, you're funneling through of how does this get me to be better of what I want to achieve? So you can extract different things from different stuff that maybe isn't even really, you know, close to what you are doing, but you can still take something from it, from that. So I thought that was so powerful. Scott, dude, thank you so much for coming on today. I really appreciate the time. I love hearing all the work that you're doing with your writing, with Do the Hard Things First. This time flew by here. But yeah, I appreciate your time today. Thank you.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I feel like I was just getting going, but yeah, we'll have a session sometime.
Absolutely. No, if people want to check out more of your work, check out your books, check out your writing, what is the best place that we can direct them?
Sure. Yeah. So we have two websites that were they're nearly done, but they're live. So ScottAllenPublishing.com, they can go there, check things out. We have a Shopify store that's just launching. That's ScottAllenBooks.com. And of course, they can always go to, Google, plug in Scott Allen author. I think you'll find a lot of like hits on there. And of course, we always have Amazon. You can go there and find all the books on there and ebook, paperback, hardcover, audiobooks as well. So
Perfect.
yeah, check it out. And yeah, had a great time today with our discussion. And just if anybody out there li who's listening, if you're stuck, just look at the easiest thing you can do. Just take one step and then just take the next one, like baby steps, just like one of my favorite movies is What About Bob? The little baby steps you have to take along the way. And that's really what it's about. You can take bigger steps later on, but you have to just start something. So.
Anytime we can get Bill Murray into a podcast, it's magic right there. So,
Sure.
Scott, thank you so much. Listeners, go check out Scott's work. I'll catch you guys on the next one. All right, peace.
Thank you so much for joining me today. I hope you found some great value here. And if you like this episode, please drop a comment and leave us a 5-star rating and review. It does more to build the show than you can imagine. And do not forget to check out and join the Strength Connection Facebook group. In this group, I share the biggest takeaways and lessons from these amazing conversations, as well as training and strength tips for pursuing mastery and fulfillment in life. This group is filled with individuals looking to take full control over their strength, and it's the perfect space to explore new ideas and to share your journey. You'll also get exclusive access to the Strength Connection Mastery Seminars. It's a deep dive into the physical, mental, and spiritual training that you can begin using immediately. So do not wait. Go now. Seriously, go. All right, much love to you. Thank you so much, and I'll catch you on the next one.